Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, everybody. This is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. I think it's a common habit among people who comment on the news is to say something to the effect that these are very sensitive and difficult times, and things are more critical than at previous times, or words to that effect. That is one of the ways to get the listeners to listen and people to buy books. However, having said that, I think I can candidly say that this particular moment in time is an extremely unexpected and difficult one. There's an election coming up in the United States in only a few months, and the administration of the United States may switch from Republican to Democratic. The Democratic Party is not the one that I knew in my youth, and neither is the Republican Party, although the Republican Party is fairly similar to the one I knew as a kid. The Democratic Party has moved far, far to the left, and many of the primary and most influential voices in the party are openly anti-Israel and even anti-Semitic. And many of the major cities in the United States are in a state of lawlessness and chaos. It's like a bad fiction novel. No one could have predicted this situation just a year ago. And in the background of all this chaos, there is the specter of the pandemic, which has disrupted life everywhere. And at this unpredictable and chaotic moment, Israel is faced with the opportunity to apply sovereignty to the Jordan Valley, our eastern border. And the government of Israel is a bulky and awkward coalition of all kinds of people and parties that have little in common except the fear of having a fourth election within less than 2 years. And so I have chosen to provide the listeners with a short historical survey, much of which is probably known, but I think it's important to remind people in light of the fact we have to make a decision about applying sovereignty to the area granted to Israel under the Trump plan. And as the playwright famously said, these are times that try men's souls. And I hope and pray that our leadership puts aside petty politics and makes the correct historical decision. I'll be back after the break. Thanks again for listening.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. Before I get into the subject that I want to discuss, I want to say hello, special hello to some listeners in Texas. I didn't know that I had, but they commented on my program last week, and I'm very appreciative of those who listen and comment, and their comment was very well taken. So hello to you down there in Texas. The subject I wanted to discuss today has to do with the fact that according to the Trump plan, it is possible now for Israel to apply sovereignty to a portion of the land of Israel west of the Jordan River, starting with the Jordan Valley itself. Now, this is something that was discussed as of the beginning of July, because that was the time that could annexation could be done. Nothing happened then. There's a lot of reasons for this, not the least of which is the attention of the population here, as well as the government, as well as governments around the world, is on the coronavirus, and that's more pressing than whether Israel applies sovereignty. So it sort of slipped under the radar, but it's still something that we are very interested in. I want to say something about the fact I think we should go ahead with. Let me start with a quotation from Shakespeare. It says the following: "There is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves, or lose our ventures." That is a quote from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, and that is the situation we are in right now. Back in 1948, David Ben-Gurion spoke at a very fateful meeting of the Jewish leadership, the Yeshuv, which decided on the Declaration of Independence by a margin of one vote. Realizing that despite the obvious risk, the historic hour should not be missed. One of the important things about good leadership, or what defines good leadership, is knowing when a historic moment has arisen that may not return. Now, the current debate is about applying Israeli sovereignty to parts of the land beyond the Green Line. And this is of great importance to the future of Israel and to a Jewish people. Keep in mind that the Green Line was an armistice line. At the end of the war back in 1948, the armies stopped at what became known as the Green Line. It was called the Green Line, by the way, because on one side it was green, because Israel developed its agriculture on its side of the line, and the Arabs simply neglected their side. So if you looked at the land from above, a bird's eye view, the Israeli side of the line was green, and the other side of the line was dusty. So it became known as the Green Line. So now, there are a lot of unclear points. Some are intentionally so. So the details and the scope of the proposed steps, there were four possible options are under consideration now. First, there is annexation. What is annexation? Annexation is applying sovereignty to the Jordan Valley and to the northern shore of the Dead Sea. That's the minimal amount of annexation. There also could be annexation of what's called Area C of Judea and Samaria. Area C is that area defined by the Oslo Accords 25 years and by the Y agreements. It includes the large Jewish settlement blocks. And if you look at the map, if you look right smack in the center of Samaria, there's a city called Ariel, which is a major city today. In respect of these areas, there is almost wall-to-wall consensus in Israel and at least tacit agreement by part of the international community, including the George W. Bush administration, that this belongs to Israel. Also, sovereignty can be applied to the isolated Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria outside the major areas, including, for example, Karnei Shomron, which is where I lived for 25 years, and I still have family there. And then there's the big annexation of all Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip, of course, is you could annex it, but it really wouldn't mean anything since it's in the control of Hamas. So with all of the political and security related and demographic and geographic difference between all of these areas, they share a number of features. First of all are beyond the Green Line. As Israel, of course, has never recognized the Green Line of the 1948 armistice as a permanent border. By the way, the Arabs have also not recognized the Green Line for the simple reason they don't recognize the existence of Israel. But both sides do not recognize the Green Line. But anything that Israel would do beyond the Green Line is looked upon by the international community as violations of international law. Now, Israel takes issue with this because, among other things, the territory beyond the Green Line was not an internationally recognized part of any sovereign country, and further, it was occupied by Israel in repulsing aggression. Keep in mind that the area beyond the Green Line was occupied illegally by Jordan from 1948 until 1967. So nobody really was sovereign in that area. Also, according to UN Security Council Resolution 242, was right after the Six-Day War back in 1967, the resolution purposely linked Israeli withdrawals for what they called territories occupied in 1967. The UN resolution did not use the word all. It did not say Israel should withdraw from all the territories occupied. It said Israel should withdraw from territories occupied. That's kind of vague. So it follows that for practical political considerations and for security and for defense, these are the primary things that should be taken into consideration before Israel applies sovereignty. Now, there are many who do not share this view. There are religious Zionists who oppose any position not based on Israel's biblical borders. Now, that's sort of a rough position to take, because under King David, the borders stretched all the way out almost to the Euphrates River. And I don't think anybody in Israel is looking for that. The Jewish people's inalienable right to the whole of the land in Israel is part of Zionism's basic credo, and it's also recognized internationally, first by the Balfour Declaration in 1917 and the 1920 San Remo Conference of the League of Nations. It never was the sole criterion and modus operandi of Zionist policy. Zionism saw the establishment of the state as its most urgent goal, even if only in part of the promised land. There was a proposal by the 1937 Peel Commission, the 1947 UN Partition Resolution, which the Arabs rejected and responded with violence. With the establishment of the State of Israel, the Zionist movement and the government of Israel focused on building its foundations, ensuring its security, absorbing hundreds of thousands of immigrants, and developing the country and its economy. We accepted the partition of the land as a practical necessity, and Israel refused to specify the borders in the Declaration of Independence back in 1948. In fact, Israel's borders after the War of Independence and after repelling Arab aggression, and the aggression, of course, was intended to destroy the newborn Jewish state, we ended up with really what was, for all practical purposes, armistice lines. And the armistice lines existed from 1948 until 1967. Now, for various reasons, there are many who choose not to distinguish between the necessity for new borders as recognized by American presidents and by what's really happening on the ground. This is a complicated subject. I will continue after the break.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. Before I get into the subject that I want to discuss, I want to say hello, special hello to some listeners in Texas. I didn't know that I had, but they commented on my program last week, and I'm very appreciative of those who listen and comment, and their comment was very well taken. So hello to you down there in Texas. The subject I want to discuss today has to do with the fact that according to the Trump plan, it is possible now for Israel to apply sovereignty to a portion of the land of Israel west of the Jordan River, starting with the Jordan Valley itself. Now, this is something that was discussed as of the beginning of July, because that was the time that annexation could be done. Nothing happened then. There's a lot of reasons for this, not the least of which is the tension of the population here, as well as the government, as well as governments around the world, is on the coronavirus, and that's more pressing than whether Israel applies sovereignty. So it sort of slipped under the radar, but it's still something that we are very interested in. I want to say something about the fact I think we should go ahead with. Let me start with a quotation from Shakespeare. It says the following: "There is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Omitted, all the voyage of their life is bound in shallows and in miseries. On such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves, or lose our ventures." That is a quote from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, and that is the situation we are in right now. Back in 1948, David Ben-Gurion spoke at a very fateful meeting of the Jewish leadership, the Yishuv, which decided on the Declaration of Independence by a margin of one vote. Realizing that despite the obvious risk, the historic hour should not be missed. One of the important things about good leadership, or what defines good leadership, is knowing when a historic moment has arisen that may not return. Now, the current debate is about applying Israeli sovereignty to parts of the land beyond the Green Line. And this is of great importance to the future of Israel and to a Jewish people. Keep in mind that the Green Line was an armistice line at the end of the war back in 1948. The armies stopped at what became known as the Green Line. It was called the Green Line, by the way, because on one side it was green, because Israel developed its agriculture on its side of the line, and the Arabs simply neglected their side. So if you looked at the land from above, a bird's eye view, the Israeli side of the line was green, and the other side of the line was dusty. So it became known as the Green Line. So now there are a lot of unclear points. Some are intentionally so. So the details and the scope of the proposed steps, there are four possible options are under consideration now. First, there is annexation. What is annexation? Annexation is applying sovereignty to the Jordan Valley and to the northern shore of the Dead Sea. That's the minimal amount of annexation. There also could be annexation of what's called Area C of Judea and Samaria. Area C is that area defined by the Oslo Accords 25 years and by the Y agreements. It includes the large Jewish settlement blocks. And if you look at the map, if you look right smack in the center of Samaria, there's a city called Ariel, which is a major city today. In respect of these areas, there is almost wall-to-wall consensus in Israel and at least tacit agreement by part of the international community, including the George W. Bush administration, that this belongs to Israel. Also, sovereignty can be applied to the isolated Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria outside the major areas, including, for example, Karnei Shomron, which is where I lived for 25 years and I still have family there. And then there's the big annexation of all Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip, of course, is you could annex it, but it really wouldn't mean anything since it's in the control of Hamas. So with all of the political and security-related and demographic and geographic difference between all of these areas, they share a number of features. First of all are beyond the green line. As Israel, of course, has never recognized the green line of the 1948 armistice as a permanent border. By the way, the Arabs have also not recognized the green line for the simple reason they don't recognize the existence of Israel. But both sides do not recognize the green line. But anything that Israel would do beyond the green line is looked upon by the international community as violations of international law. Now, Israel takes issue with this because, among other things, the territory beyond the green line was not an internationally recognized part of any sovereign country, and further, it was occupied by Israel in repulsing aggression. Keep in mind that the area beyond the green line was occupied illegally by Jordan from 1948 until 1967. So nobody really was sovereign in that area. Also, according to UN Security Council Resolution 242, was right after the Six-Day War back in 1967, the resolution purposely linked Israeli withdrawals for what they called territories occupied in 1967. The UN resolution did not use the word all. It did not say Israel should withdraw from all the territories occupied. It said Israel should withdraw from territories occupied. That's kind of vague. So it follows that for practical political considerations and for security and for defense, these are the primary things that should be taken into consideration before Israel applies sovereignty. Now, there are many who do not share this view. There are religious Zionists who oppose any position not based on Israel's biblical borders. Now, that's sort of a rough position to take, because under King David, the borders stretched all the way out almost to the Euphrates River. And I don't think anybody in Israel is looking for that. The Jewish people's inalienable right to the whole of the land in Israel is part of Zionism's basic credo, and it's also recognized internationally, first by the Balfour Declaration in 1917 and the 1920 San Remo Conference of the League of Nations. It never was the sole criterion and modus operandi of Zionist policy. Zionism saw the establishment of the state as its most urgent goal, even if only in part of the promised land. There was a proposal by the 1937 Peel Commission, the 1947 UN Partition Resolution, which the Arabs rejected and responded with violence. With the establishment of the State of Israel, the Zionist movement and the government of Israel focused on building its foundations, ensuring its security, absorbing hundreds of thousands of immigrants, and developing the country and its economy. We accepted the partition of the land as a practical necessity, and Israel refused to specify the borders in the Declaration of Independence back in 1948. In fact, Israel's borders after the War of Independence and after repelling Arab aggression, and the aggression, of course, was intended to destroy the newborn Jewish state. we ended up with really what was, for all practical purposes, armistice lines. And the armistice lines existed from 1948 until 1967. Now, for various reasons, there are many who choose not to distinguish between the necessity for new borders as recognized by American presidents and by what's really happening on the ground. This is a complicated subject. I will continue after the break.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. In the previous two segments of the program, I was discussing the background of President Trump's offer, if you will, for Israel to apply sovereignty through 30% of the area west of the Jordan River. And I was talking about the fact that Israel needs to apply sovereignty along the Jordan River because no matter what will happen in the future, that eastern border of Israel must be in the hands of the Israel Defense Forces. Otherwise, there's always the possibility of an invasion coming from the east, because the state of Jordan, the kingdom of Jordan, is essentially very weak, and it could fall. And if it fell, we would suddenly have Syria or Iraq on our eastern border. So I think the time for applying sovereignty along the eastern border is now. The whole subject has become very quiet over the last several weeks because Israel could have applied sovereignty on the 1st of July, and with the pandemic and the unstable Israeli government, it's two parties got together to form a government. They really don't get along with each other. And the country is suffering from the pandemic. So the idea of sovereignty, except for the strong right-wing people, has fallen under the radar. You don't hear much about it. But there's no doubt that it is an important item. There were many Israelis, even before the State of Israel, many Jews living in Palestine who belong either to the right-wing Herut movement or to the more left-wing labor movement, who were in favor of actually transferring the Arabs out of here. The idea of transfer became very popular after the First World War, and someone even won the Nobel Prize for transferring the Greeks out of Turkey and the Turks out of Greece after the First World War. So the idea of transfer is not as bad as the word seems to apply. Back in 1937, Burl Katznelson, one of the most prominent leaders of the labor movement and its foremost ideologue, said in a speech, and I quote, "A distant neighbor is better than a close enemy." So he was in favor of transferring the Arabs out, and it would become a good neighbor from a distance. He further said, and I quote, "I have thought for some time this is the best of all solutions. Transfer to outside the land of Israel does not mean to the area around Shechem, Nablus. I have always believed and still believe that the Arabs should move to Syria or Iraq." He said that back in 1937. Now, Katznelson was not the only one to hold this position, not then and not on the eve of Israel's independence. But as we know, this was not to be. Israel's Arab minority should indeed enjoy full civil rights, and mostly does. And it's a situation, by the way, that hopefully won't be compromised by the activities of Israel's Arab's present political representatives in the Knesset. There's a good question whether the Arabs members of Knesset should indeed be in the Knesset because of the way they speak about against the state of Israel. And there is opposition of the extreme right to the Trump plan because its vague reference to a limited Palestinian state. So there's no doubt that there's all kind of arguments about what the Trump plan really means and how it should be implied. But I think everyone agrees, or anyone who looks at the map and looks at the politics and sees what's happening around Israel, knows that the eastern border, the Jordan Valley, should be under Israeli control and under Israeli sovereignty. Why not? There's absolutely no reason why it should. Israel's not giving it over to anyone else. It could well be that time is not working in Israel's favor. It's hard to know, because the only way I can see time not working in Israel's favor is because of the unclear political situation in the United States. Because I don't have to tell the listeners what's happening in the States. It gets more chaotic every day. I'll say another word about that in a moment. Just to finish the subject of sovereignty in the Jordan Valley, it's almost a situation of now or never. You have to take advantage of the political moment that might pass away and never return. So I personally am pretty much in favor of applying Israeli sovereignty to the Jordan Valley, because we're not leaving that under any circumstances. Now, getting back to the subject of the United States, the United States is in its most divisive and chaotic situation that I've ever known it to be in my lifetime. The country is increasingly divided. There is all kinds of anger at Donald Trump on the left and deep support for him on the right. It's clear that every issue in the United States is being politicized. Everyone is being asked to choose sides. The United States is divided politically. Incidentally, in my lifetime, I have never seen people take politics so personally. I know from my own family living in the States, the people who don't like President Trump don't like him viscerally. They hate his guts. I mean, it's more than politics. It's almost something physical. Now, so far, the President Trump's policies toward Israel have been very positive. Besides military cooperation, he moved U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, and he's changed fundamental aspects of U.S.-Israel relations and how the U.S. relates to the Palestinians. So many of these policies might be reversed by a Democratic administration. The Democratic Party, which was the natural party of the Jews when I was a kid, And it's still the natural party of the Jews. 85% of the Jews in America vote Democratic. I think they do it by force of habit. But that's the point remains, that's what they do. And they're much more sympathetic. The left wing, which has taken over the Democratic Party, is much more favorable toward the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, you could say they're blinded. They don't take into account that those who still talk of a two-state solution don't seem to be reading the newspapers and know that the Palestinian leadership has not sat down for a number of years to discuss any kind of solution, let alone a two-state solution. There's an expression in Yiddish, "Nishdu mit wem in Sereden." There's nobody to speak about or with. So the support for Israel and the Congress has historically been broad and deep, all the parties. However, the more Israel is being forced in the United States to become an election year issue, the more that support will be eroded. There are moderate voices on Capitol Hill who are opposed to the radical left, and they want, and there are many in the Democratic Party who are more critical of Israel, and they want the Palestinian struggle to be seen as akin to the African American civil rights struggle in the United States, despite the lack of commonalities between the black struggle in America and the Palestinian struggle. But the people who, like, they have something now called the intersectionality, which somehow relates all the struggles as if there was something really similar about them. So Israel has to be extremely careful about who it embraces. And yet Israel has to be sensitive to this intersectionality concept on the left to try to turn Black Lives Matter into an anti-Israel crusade by claiming, among other things, that Israel trains U.S. police on how to use brutal tactics against Black Americans. Obviously, nothing could be farther from the truth. But nobody looks at the details when they hear all this propaganda. So, incidentally, I think the police in America, considering the present situation, could use a little more training. Israel shares discussions with the U.S. police. And the idea some of the work has to do to reduce incidents of harm to protesters, not the opposite. So it's a very difficult situation now for how Israel should relate to what's happening in the United States. And it's best, I think, just to keep quiet and see what happens. Israel's in a difficult position when it comes to a lot of things. It's like relationship with China and so forth. Anyhow, we've come to the end of the program. I just wanted to cover some of these issues, which I think are going to become much more acute in the next several months. Thanks for listening. Until next time, Jay Shapiro.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.